Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You are tuned in to Mouth of the South podcast. Welcome to the ramblings of a progressively optimistic truth teller. I am that truth teller. I'm your host, Shayla. Thanks for tuning in. Y'all, your girl is tired. Like, your girl is exhausted. My inner empath has just been getting her ass kicked by the entirety of the craziness that's going on right now. My apartment has become the manifestation of an Erykah Badu song. There's a lot of, I'm doing a lot of yoga, lighting a lot of incense, lighting a lot of candles, taking some bubble baths with some essential oils. Like, the self-care is real, but it just still won't let go. So I wanted to come to y'all today with this on this episode and make it a bit more of a reprieve. I had this whole essay prepared about George Floyd and the problem of whiteness and the true institution behind the police and all. Like, I was about to get into it, y'all. Like, my third eye was wide open. I was about to get into it, but I want to go a different route because I feel like this George Floyd murder, and first and foremost, RIP to George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. Black lives will always matter forever and ever. We all know this. And I honestly feel like the murder of George Floyd was just a spark that has lit a roaring flame. So in this time, what I want to say, I think the tone around this situation has been beat over our head enough. I think the context of this situation, I feel like there are a lot of Black voices out here talking about why the murder of George Floyd has had this ripple effect across the nation and across the globe at this point that it did have. I feel like that's been beat over the head and we're all a little too woke at this time. So what I want to come to you guys, like I said, I want to come to y'all with more of a reprieve and provide you with some words of encouragement from one Black person out to the entirety of my people. I love y'all. God loves y'all. We're going to be all right. We're going to get through this. And I just want to emphasize because I'm very Martin. You know, I look up to Martin Luther King Jr. He was a prophet. He was taken out of here because he was a prophet. And I do feel like during this time, Black people, we should be able to look to those leaders and to those voices that have inspired us and inspired our parents and our grandparents before us. You should definitely look to Martin Luther King during this time and hear the words he's saying. If you're gonna quote Martin Luther King, and you want to truly be abreast of what he's talking about in his speeches, go back and listen to him. Like, if you have Tidal, they have plenty of Martin Luther King speeches on Tidal. YouTube, you can just type in anything on YouTube and you'll find something. So go through, truly listen to what he was saying and how he was saying it. Like, y'all, Martin Luther King was a prophet, for real. His speeches still ring so true to today. And his speeches is what truly cemented me into the progressive person I am today. You know, Martin Luther King was a progressive. Like, he's talking about, in those speeches, he's talking about universal basic income. He's talking about the need for a working class. You know, he's talking about stuff that still rings true to today and battles that we are still fighting today. So I encourage you to look to Martin Luther King during times like these. Go find those speeches. Take a listen to them. It is a bit sad that 60 plus years in the future, we're still fighting those battles that he was fighting for us back then. But it's also incredibly uplifting because he figured it out. He figured out what we needed to do to obtain our equal rights here in America, to get the legislation we needed for protection, and to uplift our people to the platform where that they are on an even playing field as their white counterparts. That we, as black people, are on an even playing field as our white counterparts. Because, child, it ain't been even ever. So he figured it out, y'all. He go back and listen and be inspired today, because we all need it. We all need some encouragement in these times. I actually thought about Martin Luther King. He entered my heart as I was watching something on TV. And, you know, you can't get away from what's going on right now. The mainstream media is having a field day, honey. They can finally talk about something besides coronavirus and the absence of Joseph R. Biden Jr., child. They finally got something else to talk about. So they are having a field day. I got to stay on the mainstream media, child. And you got to laugh to keep from crying at this time. So I was watching something and somebody quoted Martin Luther King, him saying that riots are the language of the unheard. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that is from his speech, The Other America. And what I love about Martin Luther King Jr. is that although he was strictly nonviolent and did not believe in violence, using violence as a tool to get what he wanted for our people, he could see both sides. And I think that's very important for a leader, is the ability to see both sides, because nothing is black and white. So many things are just residing in a gray area. And although he didn't believe in nonviolence, he understood how a people could be pushed to the point of violence. He understood how you don't just get rid of anger. You can suppress it and suppress it and suppress it, but energy is neither created nor destroyed. It's just moved from one form to another. And eventually all of that suppressed anger is moved to hate, is moved to violence, is moved to riots. And that is a part of the process of change. It really is. And I don't think it's to be looked down upon, but I do feel like we need to really look at what caused people to get to this point. That, because, child, this has gone moved much further than George Floyd. Like, this is no longer just about George Floyd. This has a lot to do with the influence of social media. A lot of your faves are on social media pulling up in Minneapolis and taking pics and, you know, making it seem like the cool thing to do is to go out and protest. And then when, you know, the peaceful protest is done, because it is, you do need to protest during this time. You do need to make your voice heard. You do need to let the establishment and the systems in place know. I know that's right, Chico. Tell them. Let them know. Chico wanted to let y'all know he was here, y'all. Chico praying for y'all, too. You do need to let these systems in place know that you're not just going to lay down and take all of this, all of these discriminatory practices. Like, we need some legislation in place to change these things. But be wary that all of this energy that is out is not positive energy. I'm telling y'all, like, I'm tired. My spirit is just being pulled so many ways, because I feel like what is meant to be used to bring about change is being distorted and turned into just a means for people to get their, you know, get their Instagram likes up, get their pics off, let people know, hey, I'm out here looting, I'm out here rioting, I'm about that life on social media. But then, child, when the fires die down and we, you know, get a tad bit of normalcy restored, the police is coming for them videos, y'all. Like, don't think y'all finna just bust down the flight club in LA and just get away with all them pairs of Yeezys. Like, if you put yourself on social media doing that, baby, they're coming for you. They're coming for them 3 boxes of Yeezys you stole, which probably was all kid sizes. Okay, y'all. Oh, just a bit of levity. So yes, language are riots are the language of the unheard. That is a quote from Martin Luther King. And in that same speech, and what I feel is more important that we should really be emphasizing, he also stated that social justice and progress are the only guarantors against rioting. And so that's what I was getting at with the anger being so suppressed that it causes riots. You need that legislation, you need that social justice, that progressive thinking in place to protect people so that you don't get any more George Floyds. We don't want any more George Floyds. We don't want these stories. We don't want these stories to happen just so we can have a means to get out there and act bad off that gene. Yeah, swerve on them. Like, we don't need that. What we need is the legislation in place so that this doesn't happen again. Because what's going to happen is, and I can already tell, like, my spirit is already just pouring it into my mind. What's going to happen is Derek Chauvin, the murderer, we already know he gonna get off. We already know. Y'all already only gave him murder 3. After he just committed a public lynching in the square, he got murder 3. So what y'all think gonna happen when time comes for him to go to court and he gets off? You think people are just gonna be happy about that? No, the Flight Club is getting fucked up again. So you need that legislation in place beforehand. There should have already been a federal legislation in place from when Freddie Gray was murdered. From when Philando Castile was murdered. From when Sandra Bland was murdered. That legislation should have already been in place. And that is what Martin Luther King was getting at. The importance of moving past the anger to a point that we can all sit down at the table with our leaders, with our politicians, with our elder statesmen and say, hey, this is what my community needs. I understand y'all claim that y'all not training the police to do this, but every so often it's making mainstream media news, but every day it's real. People are in these communities really getting assaulted, harassed, and don't feel safe and don't feel protected by their community police officers. So I encourage you to go listen to The Other America, that speech from Martin Luther King is, like I said, is an awesome speech. It still speaks true to today, and it will encourage and uplift your spirit, which is what we need during these trying times. So yeah, so the rest of this episode is going to be very laid back and chill. I'm not talking about no political shit this episode because I'm already fired up. And I'm gonna cuss Joseph R. Biden Jr. out again. I'm on the verge of wanting to cuss out Barack Obama, and I just don't like feeling that in my spirit. Like, I don't like feeling that anger towards Barack Obama in my spirit. I want to remember him as the husband of Michelle Obama that I remember him as. So yeah, the rest of this episode is not gonna have any political shit. We're just gonna get into some fun shit, some stuff that can help take your mind off of all the craziness that's going on right now, and hopefully bring you some laughs and bring you some joy. Because I'm here for the laughs and the joy too. Like, I wanna wake up all my people, but I'm here to make y'all laugh too, because shit, you need to laugh to keep from crying out this motherfucker. So without further ado, let's get into some basketball shit. I finished watching The Last Dance. For those of you who have been under a rock or just don't give a fuck about basketball shit the way I do, The Last Dance is a documentary, a 10-part docuseries that covers Michael Jordan's rise from his rookie year up to his last championship season with the Bulls, I think the 97-98 season. So it goes from him as a young Michael Jordan to the peak of his stardom and everything in between. And it was a pretty good documentary. It was directed by Jason Hayhier. He actually has done a couple more documentaries through ESPN, and it was very well shot. ESPN was flexing with the amount of footage they had. Like, when I tell you the cameras were getting all of Michael Jordan's life, like, the cameras were, I think they agreed to let the cameras followed them through the whole last season while they were, you know, while Michael Jordan was gearing up for retirement, you know, wasn't really telling everybody that he was going to retire, but basically it was like, shit, if I win again, I'm gonna be out, so y'all can come follow me with these cameras and check up on your boy and see what I'm doing. It was really, really good. Like, it was just a very interesting take on how famous Michael Jordan was. My man could not do nothing in the 90s. Like, he could not do nothing. The people were on him. Like, there was one shot where he was in his hotel room and he had just gotten through like a whole crowd of fans and paparazzi and reporters and stuff like that. And he got in his hotel room and he was just like, I can't do this. I can't go back outside. Like, I'm stuck in here in this hotel room for the rest of the night. Like, I'm not gonna be able to go back outside. I'm not gonna be able to go hang out, hit the town, do anything like that. I'm stuck in this. He was pretty much like Michael Jackson level stardom. Like, you know, that type of like Beyonce level stardom. Like, you don't get to go do regular shit at all, period. Like, what is regular shit? You have gotten way too well known to ever be regular ever again. So it truly showed how much Michael Jordan had to deal with and why he retired when he did, because it kind of took the love of basketball away from him. Because how can I really enjoy the game when y'all constantly berating me with your presence? I mean, no shade, which I understand it comes with the territory of being famous, but it's like, goodness gracious, let the man breathe. Like, the man couldn't take three steps without the camera taking three steps behind him. So the documentary definitely exposed that part to me, because I was definitely unaware. And the documentary also played Mythbusters when they let everyone know that the flu game, everybody knows the flu game, the game in the 1997 finals against the Jazz where Michael Jordan was outwardly showing flu-like symptoms. He was just sick and he had came out there with the IV. Like, homeboy was experiencing flu-like symptoms and still came out and dropped almost a 40 piece on the Jazz. The documentary busted that myth, y'all. It wasn't the flu. It was just some bad pizza. Quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes heavy right now. Bad pizza. I.e. that liquor. Bad pizza. I.e. them cigars and that liquor that MJ had the night before. But yes, child, he let us know it was bad pizza, that five guys had came to his door to deliver the pizza to his hotel room door, and that after he ate the pizza, he woke up there. He was the only one that ate the pizza, y'all. Michael Jordan made that very important. He made that very imperative in the story that he was the only one that ate the pizza. I call bullshit. Don't only one person eat no pizza. When have you ever ordered a pizza with other people in the room and you was the only one that ate a slice of the pizza? Please let me know, because I've never done it. But anywho, so yeah, he ate the pizza, and the pizza was, they was trying to say that the guys, it was strongly implied. He did not come out and say that the guys put something in the pizza, but it was strongly implied that the Utah fans put something in the pizza, and they tried to get MJ out of here. They really tried to get him out of here, but instead they just supercharged my man, and he still dropped 40 on y'all, and they ended up winning, so it backfired greatly. But yeah, do y'all think it was really pizza? I already told y'all what I think it is, child. We already know MJ liked to get down. He liked to party. He liked to do his little piece of gambling. He liked to drink him a little something. So at this point, it doesn't matter. The man could have drunk gasoline the night before. He still would have came out and went ham. It went ham and cheese on everybody. So it is what it is. But that was one of the main myths that was busted during the documentary. My thoughts after the documentary, I can't say I do have a newfound respect for Michael Jordan, because I wouldn't say I was an MJ hater, but I did feel like Michael Jordan was a sellout, for lack of a better term. I feel like he didn't really come out when he was needed to be, when his voice was needed on black causes. I feel like he dumped Juanita and got with that white lady. Like, let's be real. Like, y'all, the things were there that were pointing to him just, you know, not really fucking with the black community. So I wasn't the biggest fan of MJ, I'm not gonna lie. But this documentary did give me a newfound respect for him. He was unapologetically himself, and I can appreciate anybody who presents to this world as they truly are and just gives you nothing but truth. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm not finna be nice for the sake of being nice. I wanna win, and I'm gonna do what I need to do to win. But y'all, let me get on Steve Kerr for a little bit, because you know Steve Kerr rode MJ's coattails. Not just playing. Steve Kerr was on the Bulls team with MJ, and you know Steve Kerr has gotten his own newfound fame ever since, you know, he came along and single-handedly pulled the Golden State Warriors out of obscurity. It was single-handedly Steve Kerr. It had nothing to do with Mark Jackson whatsoever, apparently. It was not Mark Jackson's ever yet praying hand that he put over the Golden State Warriors. It had nothing to do with that. It was all Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is the Warriors' white savior. Oh, man, I'm on one. But anywho, Steve Kerr, you know, he had to come out with his story about how, you know, MJ was, you know, he had to prove himself to MJ because he's just a role player. So he had to make sure he proved himself to MJ. So when MJ came up to him, they got into it. MJ punched Steve Kerr, and Steve Kerr punched MJ in the chest, y'all. Because Steve Kerr about that life. He had to make that know that he is about that life. Yeah, I'm hard on Steve Kerr because I feel like Mark Jackson don't get enough credit for the work he put in with the Golden State Warriors before Steve Kerr came in there. But power to Steve Kerr because he is a good leader and he is a good coach. But that just tickled me that he was just like, yeah, you know, because MJ, he had to show me that he was tough, and I had to show him I was tough right back. You sure did, Steve Kerr. You had to go ahead and do that. go ahead and show Mark Jackson you tough and thank him for giving you the makings of an amazing team. But all in all, my thoughts on the documentary, like I said, I do have a newfound respect for MJ, but LeBron is still the greatest player I've ever seen. He's still my favorite player by and large. I'm still not buying no damn Jordans. I'm still not buying no damn Jordans, like I said. LeBron gang. Yeah, LeBron's still the greatest to me. This did not sway my thoughts away from that. And I don't think it was meant to. I don't think the documentary was meant to just, you know, be like, oh, you people bow down to MJ as the GOAT. I do feel like he did something for basketball that no other player had done before him and no player will do after him. He definitely changed the game. But as far as my time and my cognizance of basketball, LeBron James is the greatest ever to me. I feel like he's done it in his own way. And he's done it in a way that I can appreciate more, because I do feel like LeBron has consistently held his spot for 17 seasons. He's always a leader on any team that he gets on. And there is something to be said about a person who knows their status and knows that they're a celebrity, knows that they're an icon, people look up to them, and they use that power for good. They use that power and build schools. They use that power and speak out against injustices that happen to the black community. That counts a lot to me. That is major, major points in my book. And also taking into account this era of social media that we're in, LeBron has a very, very positive presence on social media, like the Taco Tuesday. He shows his family, you know, everybody's cheering for Bronny. He's coming up in the game. So it's like you just want to see, you want to tune in and see him. And when you do tune in and see him, it's usually something positive or something corny. You know, him trying to rap and he don't really know the lyrics, but he be trying. Like, y'all don't come for my fave. Like, we've all been in the car trying to rap the song. We just know, we know it because it's our song. We've listened to it countless number of times. But it's something about when you turn that camera on and try to capture yourself in the moment, the words just don't come. You know, we all ain't cut out to be rappers. But I can and I do have a huge respect for LeBron and how he presents himself on social media and how he portrays his family to the world. You know, it's a great little black family. It's good to see that. Just like when the Obamas was in office, it was good to see that well-rounded, Cosby Show-esque, just like portrayal of a great, you know, a great black family unit. So I definitely give my man LeBron a lot of points for that. And let's be real, if social media was around in 1997, 1998, Michael Jordan almost got caught up and it wasn't even social media. It was the cameras that he allowed to be around him. Like, let's be real, you know, when it shows, it shows. So, like I said, I don't think the documentary was meant to try to change people's hearts on who they believe the GOAT to be. And it definitely did not do that for me, but it was still good for what it was. I suggest watching it. It's a good, lots of good basketball. Some of my favorite episodes, or I think my favorite episode was the one where the Dream Team, they showcased the Dream Team going to the Olympics. That was a good one. Just lots of good black men having a good time. I like to watch that. Let's be real. I got into basketball, and probably another reason that I have this love for LeBron, because I think back to when I first became cognizant of basketball, and probably when I was around 13, 14 years old, like right around when LeBron was drafted back in 2003. So like that draft class was like, let's be real, guys. Why would a 13-year-old straight girl watch basketball for the men's? Okay. I was watching it for the men's, and some nice men's they were. Like, that was Dwayne Wade. That was young Bosh. That was young Carmelo with the straight backs. You know what? I'm not going to even get into it because I'm already on one. But let's just say I developed a love for basketball early and it has stayed with me. Yes, it has. Yes, it has. So, yeah, that was my take on The Last Dance. It was awesome. I def suggest checking it out. So let's continue this pod of laughs and fuckery, and get into some messy shit. So the versus battles are still going long and strong, and have taught us all that no matter how rich you are, no matter how many hits you have, no matter how famous you are, good Wi-Fi is very hard to find, child. It's we trying to find that in the daytime with a flashlight, because it just seems like everybody is trying to do their battle on LTE and it's not working out very well for everyone. But the versus battles are still going on. They recently had a dance hall battle between it was Beanie Man and Bounty Hunter, and that one, yeah, that one was really good. Like, they came out, it was like a real deal show. I think they was in the same room and they would just kind of switch places, do their song, you know, talk their shit, switch it out, do their song, talk their shit. And in the midst of their party, of their dance hall fiesta, the police tried to come in and shut them down. And the police got shut down with the quickness. Like, child, you're not finna come in here and ruin our party. We're not doing anything. We're just having a good time on Instagram Live for our fans. So, you know, get with it to get lost, child. I don't know what to tell you. So, but they were able to complete it. Even after the police came, they just shooed them on away. And Oh, child, my phone started ringing. I thought that was the police trying to get me out of here. They're trying to call me like they did Beanie Man. But yeah, so that dance hall one was really good. Then following that one, we had Jagged Edge versus 112. And child, that's when that damn terrible Wi-Fi started kicking in again. 112 just could not have it together. Like, then the comments was roasting 112, talking about Diddy sent them some Ciroc, but he didn't even show up for the Instagram live. Poor 112. Sorry to that 112. And just when I thought Versus had reached its end, because to be honest, I have not been watching them live when they happen. I will catch the recap on YouTube or somewhere whenever I get bored in the following days. But apparently tonight, today's Sunday, so tonight they're supposed to be having having Kirk Franklin versus Fred Hammond on Versus. That's very interesting, but let's be real, if we're talking about hits and we're talking about mainstream hits that people that aren't true blue Baptist churchgoers will know, child, Kirk Franklin got this one in the bag, let's be real. Like, Kirk Franklin has the hits for your life and for your salvation. Now, Fred Hammond, he has his tunes too. He has the classic No Weapon. I mean, that one is an automatic W no matter when it's played against any Kirk Franklin song. No Weapon Formed Against Me Shall Prosper is, I mean, even those well steeped in the world know that one. And, I mean, you can't sleep on Radical for Christ either. Just how Kirk Franklin had the family, Fred Hammond had Radical for Christ. He had his choir behind him too. So that will prove to be a good one and a nice twist to the genre, because Versus was getting tired, y'all. We was running out of people to go up against. I heard something about DMX going up against Eminem, and child, just end it. Just end it before it goes that far, please. Y'all, I already had D. Kenneth Babyface Edmonds on there trying his best to work on Instagram. The last thing I need to see is the god DMX get punked by Instagram and Wi-Fi. That's the last thing I need to see. So yeah, are there any Versus battles that you have not yet seen that you are dying to see? Let me know. I really wanted to see a cute little Monica versus Brandy, but we ain't gonna get that. They still too much animosity there, okay? The boy is still neither one of theirs, and it's just too much animosity between them to actually have a good friendly battle. Like, I wanna see another one like Jill and Erica. That was just a vibe. It was just calming. I felt so zen afterwards. Like, that's what we need. We need some more of that. So, shout out to Versus. We'll see how much longer this can keep going and what depths of competition we will get into in this music game. Some more messy shit, y'all. We have to get into, I wasn't talking about Real Housewives of Atlanta reunion, but part 3 didn't really get much, y'all. Besides Yvonna scaring Nene away from that laptop, child. First of all, Bravo was so petty for constantly giving us that, giving us Nene's closed laptop. Like, every time somebody had something to say about Nene, they would just pan over to her square of nothingness, her laptop halfway closed, and her written reads just laying on the desk. So that was a good little time, but part 3 of the Real Housewives of Atlanta didn't give us much. But the messiest, child, the messiest thing I wanted to get into was Azealia Banks then reappeared, child. So, you know, Doja Cat, I already blessed her heart the last episode as she came out and still was being loud, strong, and wrong about the craziness that she was talking about. So she don't want nobody to help you, child. That's who she want to be. That's who she has presented to the world, so that's who she is. So Azealia Banks, you know, she had to come out and let people have it because she feels like it's all of these big name people caping for Doja Cat. But when Azealia be out here, you know, sacrificing chickens in her closet and saying that Russell Crowe spit on her, didn't nobody have her back the way that they have Doja Cat back? And you know what, Azalea, you right. Don't nobody come out and cape for you the way they cape for Doja Cat. So in the midst of her rant going off about how nobody has her back, she just go ahead and spill the tea that she slept with Dave Chappelle while he was married. And not only did she sleep with him, child, she said he got that Mandingo. And not only did he have that Mandingo, child, she wanted another piece of that Mandingo again. Now, we all know Azalea Banks is problematic. Like, I actually really dig her music. I wish that she was a little bit more stable. I wish she had a little bit more therapy or a good family friend or, you know, some mammy titties she could rest her head in every once in a while so she could, you know, just realign her chakras. But, you know, I dig the girl. She's super talented, and I just hate that what she usually is known for is mess and fuckery. But child, we're gonna get into this mess because that just took me out. Dave Chappelle, for real, girl, for real, sis. And I believe her too, because I'm not saying that, you know, she a high dollar hoe. I'm just saying she they could be in the same room. It could happen. And I believe her. The way she was describing it, child, she looked like she was a little bit dignitized by that one. She wanted that old thing back. She wanted that woman's husband. But in the midst of my tickledness, very serious question popped into my head. And I need to know if anybody else is here with me on this. Is Dave Chappelle a zaddy? Is he? Because let's be real. When Dave Chappelle came back on the scene, because y'all know he went to Africa, then he was gone for a minute, then he came back with the jump off. Them shoulders and them arms, they was looking right. Like, he had his good, fresh grown man strength in there, because we all know, you know, Dave Chappelle funny, but back in the day, he was looking real, you know, scrawny, giving you real pothead, I hang out with a bunch of white people type of tease. But when he came back, he had like that grown man, black man strength in the shoulders. Like, you know, like he went down to Africa and was really doing some heavy lifting. So I don't know. Dave Chappelle may have that D, y'all. He may be funny and got that D, okay? I just thought that messy shit needed to be addressed. So let me know what y'all think. Y'all think Chappelle a zaddy or nah? Y'all think Azalea got a piece of that D, or she just making it up? Ain't no way she just made that up off top of her head. And then pulled out Dave Chappelle from nowhere. She ain't make that up. She ain't just gonna toss a neutrino bomb in the middle of that man relationship out of a, I was just watching your stand-up today, and so I'm finna make something up. Nah, she got that D. She got that D. All right, y'all. So that's enough of the messy shit, for real. Because I'm gonna end up telling on myself. So let's do the Bless Your Heart segment, and then we'll close out the show. Hey! Dear legal weed industry, y'all can't slick a can of oil. Now don't get this confused. I like a little Mary Jane every now and again. Marijuana should be decriminalized federally and removed from the drug scheduling list completely. You know they got it up there as a Schedule 1 narcotic on the same list as heroin and X pills? Child, saying weed affects the body exactly like heroin and LSD is sillier than clown college. Before the war on black people, the war on drugs to continue, marijuana had to be vilified and its users needed to be seen as criminals. Can't justify sending black people to jail for life on marijuana offenses if marijuana is seen as the healing plant that it truly is. Black people make up 13% of the U.S. population, but are 40% of drug imprisonments and only 4% of legal weed business owners. Fast forward 40 plus years, and the legislators that went so hard against the legalization of marijuana are the ones benefiting greatly from it. John Boehner, I'm talking about you and your No Child Left Behind looking ass. You've jumped from tobacco to legal weed, and we already know how you and your fellow rich white man do. Y'all are in the process of completely shutting out small business owners from the benefits of marijuana legalization, with absolutely no intentions of releasing and providing a means of reform for the black people y'all put under the jail for a plant. A piece of grass, child. My green thumb grandma could grow it in her yard. We're not here for it. My fellow marijuana mavens, pay close attention to legalization legislation when it comes to your state and vote accordingly. It's not blasphemous to the 420 gods to vote no if the legalization will just be another hindrance to the community it's meant to help. And marijuana industry, if you think black people are going to sit idle by and let yet another disenfranchisement train run us down, then child, bless your heart. Alrighty, folks. Well, we have come to the end of another episode of Mouth of the South podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. All the usual ending stuff. Follow us on Twitter, Mouth of the South Pod. Follow me on Instagram, Slight_Shade. And check out the YouTube channel. All information that you need to do those things will be in the description box below. As you can see, I'm tired of talking, y'all. I'm tongue tied. I'm Southern. You can't do all this talking. We get tongue tied, okay? So, yes, thank you for tuning in. And as we say down here in the South, God don't like ugly.